and been pretty fascinated by what he went through. I've tried to get into his mind and into his body, as it were, to understand what my Lord went through on my behalf. And I'd like to share some, just the ideas of the trials that he went through, starting at the Garden of Gethsemane when they came to arrest him. And I want us to kind of give thought to, serious thought to, what our Lord did for us. That he said that a man who was willing to lay down his life for his friends, and he was calling us friends. He becomes my best friend. You ever heard of BFF? You know what that stands for? Best friend forever. And he's my best friend forever. He proved that by his sacrificial death on the cross at Calvary. And I'd like for us just to get into that mindset for a little bit. In just a little while, we're going to be taking the Lord's Supper. And I was thinking along this line as I was making preparations for taking the Lord's Supper. I try to think about the Lord's Supper on Saturdays. I try to get in my mind on that, so I don't just come here and just sit down and take the Lord's Supper. I want to build up to that. And often what I'll do on Sunday mornings, I go to the building about 4:30 to 5 o'clock in the morning on Sunday mornings. I've done that for 50 years. I've always done that. And number one is I'm always very nervous about speaking and teaching Bible classes and preaching. I don't know if you noticed that, but I was always born nervous to stand in front of public people, in public to speak. So I'd go to the building and I work on my lessons, and I stand up in a podium every Sunday morning. I'll preach it to an empty room, trying to get into my mindset what it is. And in preparation for the Lord's Supper, I'm also trying to give thought to that, because I don't want to eat and drink unworthily. Making thoughts along that line, I put together this trials of Jesus leading up to the actual crucifixion itself. I've given out some cards to two or three people here who might like to help me read. And you'll notice that I name it the seven trials of Jesus. In reality, technically there was only six, but there will be a seventh trial, and it is coming. And it's the trial of Jesus Christ, in which I, right now, am making judgments. I'm going to be standing in the place of Pontius Pilate. I'm standing in the place of the Sanhedrin Council. I'm making a verdict about who I believe Jesus is. Is he innocent or is he guilty? And so I think you know where I'm coming from, and I'm pretty sure I know where you're coming from on the answer to that. But I'd like for us to pause and think about that. That's why I put this lesson together, because I was thinking about my own. Rick, what would you say if presented with all the evidence? What would you say about our Lord? And of course, that's what ultimately becoming a Christian is about. You have to draw that conclusion, because what is the confession that we make before we're baptized? What do we say?
Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And with that confession, it's called in the Bible the good confession. And what it means is it's actually the great confession, because you are determining your eternal destiny by the making of that confession. When you draw by faith based on evidences that you have been presented in the Word of God, you have logically, in a logical way, gone through all the evidences and then drawn a bottom line and said, here's my conclusion. My conclusion is, he was the innocent one. He was the sinless one. He is God incarnate, God in the flesh. He is my Savior. And he is now my King and my Lord. And so I submit my authority, I submit all authority to him. And I will now be baptized or crucified in the burial of water and rise to walk in newness of life. And so that is what we're contemplating right here. We have to understand what this evidence is as we look through the trial. We're going to be looking at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so as we do that, you'll notice the conspiracy of the plot to kill Jesus Christ. I want to spend just a few minutes reading about this plot, this conspiracy, by those who hated him, those who denied that he was who he claimed to be. even though the evidence was overwhelming, and they could themselves acknowledging in private and in private quarters that he's working great miracles and he's doing great deeds, but we've got to hush him up because, hey, he's getting ready to take our place if we don't do something quick. And so there was this great conspiracy, and it went on. If you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you'll notice that it goes all the way back in time to John chapter 5. The conspiracy is taking place up to 2 years before his actual death. They've been plotting on this for a long time, but it took a while before we get to the end of John chapters 11, about chapter 11, where you actually see they said, now it's got to happen, and it's got to happen now. In the last week of his, that we know of his life, that happens. So let's read, those of us who's going to read, Mark's going to read in the Gospel of John. He's got the majority of the reading to this morning. But a couple of the others have some others. So when I put the verses up there, we'll be reading those verses. You've got a card to kind of follow along with where we're going. So let's just read about this this idea. In John 5, verse 18, and then we'll skip over to chapter 7. Mark, go ahead and read all those verses for me.
John 5, 18, and I'm reading from the English Standard Version.
Okay.
This is why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God.
Go ahead.
Okay, then we'll move over to John chapter 7, verse 1.
And then we'll just kind of skip down a few verses. It just shows you the plot there without having to read the whole thing.
After this, Jesus went in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. And moving down to verse 19. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet none of you keep the law. Why do you seek to kill me?
Okay.
In verse 25, some of the people of Jerusalem therefore said, is not this the man whom they seek to kill? Then verse 30, so they were seeking to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. Verse 32, the Pharisees heard the crowd muttering these things about him, and the chief priests and the Pharisees sent officers to arrest him. And then finally, verse 44, some of them wanted to arrest him, but no one laid hands on him.
So you can see what's going on here. You're in John 5 and then again in John chapter 7. This would probably be quite a few months before the actual arrest is taking place. But you're seeing it's just an ongoing drumbeat. Boom, boom, boom. They're sick of this guy, what he's doing. The crowds are massive. They're starting to grow in the ministry of Christ. And so they even start sending Pharisees and others of their ilk to go out up to Galilee and observe what's going on and then come back and report to the Sanhedrin. And so you kind of understand what's going on here. This is a constant drumbeat. They're hating this man, and they want to do something about it, but they don't know what to do because the crowds are growing so massive, and they're looking at him as someone who is very special. Okay, so let's move on in John chapter 8, verses 37 through 40, and then skip down to verses 58 and 59. Mark.
Okay, so John 8:37. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my words find no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father. They answered him, Abraham is our father. And Jesus said to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did.
Let's skip down to verse 58.
And down to verses 58 and 59. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple.
So sometimes they're plotting, but sometimes it's just the rage takes over. And in this particular moment, they weren't going to go through any formal trial to kill him. They just got mad at him and started picking up stones, and they were going to try to kill him. What I didn't talk about was one time in Luke chapter 4 where he went up to his own hometown. You remember what they tried to do? Even this is not the Sanhedrin here, but this is just his own people he grew up with in Nazareth. Remember when he got up and he said, as he read Isaiah 61, he says, today this is fulfilled in your hearing. He was talking about messianic prophecies. And he says, I am the Messiah, basically. And they said, well, we know your mama and your daddy. We know your mama and you. We know your daddy. You know, we're going to go after. And then they took him out on the brow of the hill. And they were going to throw him over. So there was even others besides the Sanhedrin that were that hated what he was saying. So let's kind of keep that thing going. The plot keeps thickening. Then over in John chapter 10, verses 30 and following.
I and the Father are one. The Jews picked up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, I have shown you many good works from the Father. For which of them are you going to stone me? And the Jews answered him, it is not for a good work that we are going to stone you, but for blasphemy, because you, being a man, make yourself God.
In verse 39.
Verse 39. Again they sought to arrest him, but he escaped from their hands.
Then skip over to chapter 11. We'll read verses 48 through 53.
If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better that for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish.
He's really doing some thinking, isn't he? You know, first off in chapter 10, they were just mad as a hornet at him, and they just started picking up stones. Again, they were going to kill him. So in other words, there were occasions, and we probably don't have all the records of all of those things. There were other moments in time when they were probably trying to kill him. We have at least three that they tried to push him over the mount, over the hill, and other times they picked up stones to throw at him. But others were just simply plotting. There was a true conspiracy where they wanted to have him arrested and have the Romans execute him. That's what their whole plot was. They didn't want this blood on their own hands. They wanted it on the Romans' hands. They wanted to be able to wash their hands as like Pilate washed his and be able to say, oh, we didn't kill him. But they're the ones who went through the motions to get it done. So you can see what Caiaphas is doing. By the way, when you see the stories of Annas and Caiaphas, as soon as they arrest Jesus, remember who are they took him to, Annas or Caiaphas? Took him to Annas first. Annas wasn't the high priest. He was the high priest in the Jewish mind, but he had done something to upset the Caesar back in Rome, and they deposed him from high priest and put his son-in-law, who was Caiaphas, on the high priest seat. And so Caiaphas is kind of the reigning high priest by Roman authority, but Annas is in the minds of the Jews the real high priest. So you kind of have a co-regency of a high priesthood going on here as far as the Jews see it. They actually defer to Annas over Caiaphas, who the Romans had designated. But you're going to see all that going back and forth. And so you see what's going on. And then, of course, there's going to be this cowardly arrest. And we won't even read the passage. You already know it. But they sent out this mob with guards and everything else, with torches and everything else. Who knows how many people were actually coming? But it must have been a pretty good-sized crowd. And Jesus says, you come out to me with swords and staves to arrest me? What's going on here? I was daily with you in the temple, and you had every opportunity. But because I know what you're up to, I know your plot, I know all that's going on. In fact, the Bible tells us again and again, Jesus, knowing that they were trying to kill him, moved out of the city and moved off into the countryside. And so he says, my hour is not yet come. Jesus has plotted himself when he would die. He knew that he was going to die on the Passover. That was what he and his father had already designated, because Jesus was himself the Passover lamb. He would die when the Passover lamb was killed. And that's who he was going to be. And so all along in the Gospel of John, five times it says, my hour is not yet come, my hour is not yet come, my hour is not yet come, my hour is not yet come. And then he says, my hour has come. The hour is here. He has been putting this all together. He knows exactly what he's doing. And then finally, the arrest is there. He goes off into the garden. He prays. He asks the Father to remove this cup from him. The Father says no. Jesus says okay. And with great resolution and with very calm demeanor, he walks out to meet Judas and the assassin crowd. He knew this was his hour, and so this is going on. And so then we come to the trial. So now we're going to go to Annas' house. It's not the courtroom at all. In fact, it's going to his house deep into the night, probably somewhere around midnight to 2 o'clock in the morning. This is going on. And so let's kind of read that in John chapter 18, verses 12 through 14.
So the band of soldiers and their captain of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. First they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people.
Okay, so we see what's going on. Caiaphas, as the reigning high priest from Roman authority, says, We've got to save our nation. We had to sacrifice one man to make that happen. And so they'd already picked out who it was going to be. It was going to be Jesus Christ. And so he says that, but then we skip down the very next verse in verses 19 through 23. We see kind of the decision that they come to.
The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said. When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, is that how you answer the high priest? Jesus answered him, If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. If what I said is right, why do you strike me? And then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest.
Let me ask you a question. Anybody who's kind of done some studies or reading on this, is this even legal? This whole scenario is illegal. It was in the Jewish law. You could not, first of all, do a trial at nighttime. And so there was no officiality to this at all. This is all illegal. It's why they took him to Annas' house instead of to the courtroom. Because taking him to a courtroom, they're going to wait till early in the morning to take him to the courtroom, do their thing on the proper day, make it look like it's official, and then run him right over to Pilate's house. But this is all going on behind the scenes in somebody's house, so it doesn't look like it's an official trial. So make it look like it's not illegal, but it is illegal. Everything they're doing is illegal here. And so there's a guilty charge already been laid at him. They now begin to slap him. They're going to start beating him. They're going to do things to him. And so kind of get that picture. This is going on probably between midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning. Kind of get that picture. Nobody's sleeping now, and all this is happening. Peter's now going to go, and of course the rooster hasn't crowed yet, so we understand what's going on now. So then we pick up with the second one. They're going to running from Annas' house over to Caiaphas' house, okay? And so in Matthew chapter 26, verses 51 through 68.
And suddenly one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword, struck the servant of the high priest, and cut off his ear. But Jesus said to them, put your sword in its place. For all of you who take the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot now pray to my Father and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels? How then could the scriptures be fulfilled that it must happen thus? In the hour Jesus said to the multitudes, have you come out against a robber with swords and clubs to take me? I sat daily with you, teaching in the temple, and you did not seize me. But all of this was done that the scriptures and the prophets might be fulfilled. And then the disciples forsook him and fled. And those who had laid hold on Jesus laid him away from Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance to the high priest's courtyard, and then he went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Even though many false witnesses come forward and then found none, but at least two false witnesses came forward and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? But Jesus kept silent, and the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to them, it is as you said, nevertheless I say unto you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, he has spoken blaspheme. What further needs do we have of witnesses? Look now, you have heard his blasphemy. What do you think? They answered and said, he is deserving of death. Then they spat in his face and beat him, and others struck him with the palms of their hands, saying, prophesy to us, Christ, who is the one who struck you?
Okay, so you know, you kind of see what's going on here. They're at Caiaphas' house, and they'll eventually have to go back to Annas to make it legal as far as the early morning hour. So this is still going on early in the night. And Peter, of course, he's come to the courtyard. He's gone to Caiaphas' house outside his courtroom, at his house. And he's kind of witnessing a lot of what's going on. But you can kind of begin to see what they're doing to him. They're already being very illegal about this. And they're bringing in all these witnesses that are false witnesses. They can't even corroborate their own stories together. And so finally, he is just kind of put out with this. And he finally finds two guys who probably have been sent off into the corner and says, get your story together right, and then come back in and tell your story. And they did, and then, of course, then he makes, the high priest makes this great show of, oh, man, this is terrible. You make yourself the Christ. So Jesus wouldn't talk. So finally, he puts him under oath. Number one, it's an illegal thing. You cannot, back then, we would call it pleading, we would say today, pleading the fifth. You have the right to remain silent. You cannot convict yourself, okay? And they were going through that very trial, making Jesus, now we adjure you by the living God, are you who you say you are? And he says, absolutely I am. And they says, well, what further need we have of witnesses? Because they didn't have any more good witnesses to start with. And so they've already convicted him before it ever goes to, it ever gets to the actual Sanhedrin council. So then that brings us to the Sanhedrin council. In Luke chapter 22, verses 66 through 71. Yes, sir.
As soon as it was day, the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, came together and led him into their council, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will by no means believe. And if I also, you will by no means answer me or let me go. Hereafter the Son of Man will sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then they all said, are you then the Son of God? So he said to them, you rightly say that I am. And they said, what further testimony do we need? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth.
Okay. It often looks like Matthew 26 and Luke 22 are the same exact courtroom situation, but it's actually different. Peter, of course, remember, he was doing all of that. And when did the rooster crow? You know, the rooster would crow early in the morning, but he'd already denied the Lord before the rooster ever crowed. And then when the rooster crowed, then he went out and wept bitterly. Here we see it, the Bible actually says in Luke 22 verse 66, early in the morning. So now the others are going on at nighttime, and now this takes place early in the morning. A lot of people will, you know, disagree with some of that, but I just tried to piece it together as best I could, that you had the Sanhedrin now in a full trial. They've gone to Annas, they've gone to Caiaphas, and now they're back at Annas's, and Annas is kind of overruling this thing, bringing the council together, and coming to a conclusion so that they would have something to take to Pontius Pilate. And so they've got all this figured out, but notice that what they've convicted him on base of that he says, I am who?
Son of God.
I'm the Son of God. Is that going to hold water in a Roman court? They don't care a lick about that. The only thing they're going to have to bring up is he made himself a king, which they don't even talk about here during any of these three trials. Has nothing to do with him being king of the Jews or anything like that. But that's what they're going to bring up so that they can say he opposes Caesar. Anybody who makes himself king is opposed to Caesar. So you can kind of see this is just a kangaroo court going on here. This is ridiculous. Everything is illegal about it. And it's now early in the morning, and now it's the only time when they can actually start having a trial. Is when the morning has come, but they've already done their decision during the course of the night, and so. But I want you to see a little bit of a in Luke 23 verses 50 and 51.
Now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision. Indeed, he was from Arimathea, the city of the Jews, who himself was also waiting for the kingdom of God.
Okay, who's this guy? Who's Joseph of Arimathea?
He's one
that buried Jesus, wasn't he? And so here's his counsel. So the first two trials you have in Annas' house and then Caiaphas' house, you have only, it says, the chief priest and the elders. You don't have the entire councils there. And it wasn't until early in the morning they called the entire council together. How many people are in this council? 70, right? 71, counting the high priest, it'd be the whole council. So the first two trials, they don't have the entire council. Joseph is probably not even there. And who else is on this on this court, by the way? There's two people that would have denied killing Jesus Christ. Nicodemus is also a council member. And so if you think about that, you have Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea. They've got 70, so if the total at least was 68 to 2, you know, if you took a vote, because they would have stood up against that. In fact, they go out and even bury Jesus Christ, defiling themselves so they can't even take the Passover, right? And so Joseph of Arimathea stands up and says, no, no, verdict is not unanimous. But Nicodemus, although it doesn't tell us that, probably was on the council and he was also saying the same thing. So I kind of want to get that picture of the trial. So it looks like it's a done deal. They've got it all done. Now it's just kind of going and washing their hands of this matter and taking it over to, early in the morning now, they're going to take it over to Pontius Pilate. So in John 18, verses 28 through 19, 13, a little bit of a longer reading, but I want Mark to read that for us. John 18, verse 28 through chapter 19, verse 13.
Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered him, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you. Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. The Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that. I might not be delivered unto the Jews, but my kingdom is not from the world. Then Pilate said to him, so are you a king? Jesus answered, you said that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? After he said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? They cried out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in purple robe. They came to him saying, hail, king of the Jews, and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, see, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him. So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, behold the man. When the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. The Jews answered him, we have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die because he has made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate answered him, you will not speak to me? Do you not know what I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you? Jesus answered him, you have no authority over me at all unless it has been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, if you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar. So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and set him down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone of Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha.
What have we learned here in this trial? It's kind of a longer trial going on. It goes back and forth. He goes in and out before the people, goes in and talks to Jesus, comes back out. It's kind of an ongoing trial going on, and we can see that Pilate is really struggling here. Over and over again, what does he see as far as how's this logically working out in his mind? What does he conclude about Jesus? He's innocent. He's seeing that all the way through. He can see, in fact, one passage will tell us he knew for envy they had turned him over to him, that they were jealous of his popularity among the people. Pilate's no idiot. He's known from a week ago when the triumphal entry came in, that's his business, is to keep the peace, and he could see the whole city swelling to Jesus Christ and yelling out as they put palm leaves on the ground and their own clothes before the donkey to walk on. He says, Hosanna to the highest. They're calling him the Messiah, what they're doing. They're calling him king. And so, and the people are yelling out, hey, the Pharisee says, hey, he's telling these people to shut up. And he says, if I was to shut up, who would cry out? The stones would cry out who I am. And so Pilate knows all of this. He's got witnesses all over this place coming back to report what's going on. That's his business during this time. The reason he's in Jerusalem is because normally he's in Caesarea. But during the Passover feast, when the crowds swell, he's got to bring his army there and keep control of the crowd. That's his job, keep the peace. And so he's doing everything he can to keep the peace here. So what he's doing is they're asking him, are you a king then? Because that's what they're claiming you are to be, and I'm supposed to now convict you because you are a king. Are you a king? And Jesus said, yes, I'm a king. And for this reason, I was born into the world. But my kingdom is what? Not of this world. If it were, my servants would be out there fighting. You don't see my servants out there fighting. In fact, if you ask a little bit about what went on, when one of my servants did pull a sword and took off a guy's ear, what did they do? I put it back on him and I said, put away your sword. He who lives by the sword dies by the sword. This is not a rebellion. This is not a revolution. And so Pilate would have got word of that as well. And so he knows that he's no threat to Caesar. And so he's going to call him innocent. And so he has to give a decision. He says, what is truth? I find no fault in him. Four times he says that in this first trial, I find no fault in this man. So kind of get this picture of what's going on. Pilate, he's got a legal obligation before Rome to render a correct verdict. That's his job. And so he's trying. So, but he's going to learn something. In Luke chapter 23, beginning in verse 4 down through verse 12.
So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, I find no fault in this man. But they were more fair, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man was Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to the Herod jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracles done by him. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been in enmity with each other.
Yeah, they were in a... You know, Herod was a Caesar-appointed ruler of this area, and Pilate, they were in contention with one another. But on this particular occasion, you know, my enemy is your enemy. That makes us friends. You know, that's kind of what's going on here. And so here we've got. Remember what Herod was doing when he was out, when Jesus was out preaching. He was sending messengers out there to kind of watch what's going on, and everybody's kind of worried about Herod. And remember what Jesus said: "You go tell that fox." You go tell that fox that I'll be here today and tomorrow and on the third day. We'll see how this turns out. So Jesus is on to Herod. He knows what he's plotting. He knows what's going on in the minds of all men. He can read our thoughts. And so Jesus was able to know what Herod was up to. Herod's been after this guy for a while, and now finally he's got him. He's so excited. He says, I hear all about you. You've got all these miracles. But what does Jesus do the whole time he's in the court of Herod? He doesn't say one word. He knows this is illegal it's as legal as all get out. And so he's not even going to at all corroborate any of this testimony. And he's not going to even act like this man is even the king. Because he's a king. He's an Idumean. He's not even a true Jew, by the way. Herod is of the Idumean people, which means the Edomites. He's an Edomite. He's not a Jew. Esau, in other words, and Jacob. Jacob becomes Israel. Esau is the other one, you know. And so He's not even, he's certainly not a king of the Jews. He's made himself king of the Jews by a royal appointment from Caesar, but he's not the true king of the Jews. Jesus is, and so this man's usurped authority. This man is usurping the throne as king of the Jews, and Jesus knows it, so he's not even going to acknowledge who he is. You're not a king. I don't have to talk to you. And that's so it makes Herod mad. And so what he does is he sends his men out to appease the crowd of the Sanhedrin who sent their group over there to watch this thing too. And they want to know what Herod's going to do about it. And so Herod begins to mock him, and he has the soldiers humiliate Jesus Christ. And Jesus just stands there silent as the lamb. Like a lamb before its slaughter is shears, he opens not his mouth. And so, again, Herod's basically saying, because Pilate's going to tell us that Herod said he's not guilty. Isn't that interesting? That Herod has been after Jesus for a while, and yet he's going to bring a verdict of not guilty. Pilate says, he said, I sent him to Herod, and he sent him back saying he's not guilty. Interesting. So, with that, we're going to go to the final trial in Luke 23, verses 13 through 16.
Then Pilate, when he called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, you have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things which you accuse him. No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him.
Wow, Pilate he's dealing with this. This has been going on now since probably about 6 o'clock this morning. They rousted Pilate out of his bed, basically, and he had to come out, bring his thing out to see them, because they couldn't go into him because they would defile themselves in a Gentile's court. And so he has to bring his judgment seat out on the pavement to them and do this trial. And then he sends him to Herod, and he's waiting and waiting and waiting. They finally bring him back. And so now he's got to listen to the full case again. He's got to make a verdict. And so he's chewing on this. And when he finally gets done, he realizes that there's going to be a riot. There's going to be a real issue, and he's going to get back to Caesar. And his job is to keep the peace. And so, okay, one man will have to be sacrificed for the king, for the citizens. I'm totally against this. In fact, what do we also know that Pilate's wife sent message to him? Don't do this. In fact, she calls him a just and righteous man. I've had this dream of this man during this whole time, and don't have anything to do with this. So Pilate, and believe me, the Romans took great omens from their dreams and their visions. And so he knows from right now, the gods are speaking here. The Roman gods are saying, basically, if his wife is telling him that. And so let him, but he finally says, when he sees the crowds are going, crucify him, crucify him, and he sees it's going to get out of hand, and there's going to be a mob action, and it's going to get out of hand. He does something he doesn't want to do, and he tells them, okay. In John 19, verses 14 through 19.
Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, behold your king. They cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar, so he delivered him over to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus, and he went out bearing his own cross to the place called the Place of a Skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on either side and Jesus between them. Pilate also wrote an inscription and put it on the cross. It read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews.
Isn't that sad? This is what we all think about when we take the Lord's Supper. An image, something like that, where he finally puts it out there as Jesus of Nazareth, and he writes it in three different languages to make sure everybody knows. He has that posted above the head of Jesus Christ. And so here our Lord is going to be crucified as an innocent man. Pilate says he's not guilty. In fact, I want you to see something as we close our lesson. We find that seven times plus Pilate's wife, we find that Pilate said, I find no fault in this man. Count them. And when he first meets Jesus Christ, he comes back out immediately and says, I find no fault in this man. And then he returns, after Jesus returned to Pilate from Herod, so he sends him to Herod, he comes back, and he says, behold, I have examined him before him and found that no fault in this man touching those things whereof ye accuse him, no, nor did yet Herod. So two of us have drawn the conclusion that he's innocent. after offering a release to the prisoners, to the Jews, in other words, Barabbas, and offering to scourge Jesus and then release him, he said into the third time, why? What evil has he done? I find no cause of death in him. There you go. And when he had washed his hands before the multitude, he said, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. Verse 4. After Jesus had been mocked, whipped, and the robe put on him, if they said to him they'd be scourged, then come back out and says, look, let's do away. Behold, I bring him forth to you that you may know that I find no fault in him to let him go. That's 5. Then the sixth time, when Pilate gave permission for his crucifixion, he says, you take him. By the way, that's interesting. You take him and crucify him. You know what Pilate was just giving them authority to do? Who's the only one who had the right to kill anybody in that area? Only the Romans. But the Roman authority was giving them permission. You want him crucified? Go crucify him yourself. That's not what they want. They don't want him just as dead. They want the Romans to take the blame, not themselves. So because the crowds are going to go after them, they're fearing the mob, and so they want the Romans to take the hit here. You choose him. I find no fault in him. They said, oh, no. And after Pilate learned of Jesus' claim to be the Son of God, he talked with Jesus for the last time. And upon this, Pilate sought to release him. So he's going back and forth. 3 times we see him go back inside to talk to Jesus, then bring him back out. And then, so that final time, he says, Pilate sought to release him. In other words, saying he's innocent. And then we see, of course, his wife also had sent message earlier in the day that he's working on in his heart again. Man, my wife even had this dream and says, don't have anything to do with this just man. In other words, what we find is, I find no fault in this man. 6 trials have taken place now. We'll close our lesson on this. 6 trials of Jesus Christ, 3 Jews and 3 Roman trials. The Jews said on all 3 occasions he's guilty. The Romans said on all 3 occasions he's innocent. But there is a 7th trial. And that 7th trial is, like I said a few moments ago, that's us. All of us. I like to do a lesson like this before when I talk to somebody about becoming a Christian. And I basically say, you have to make a decision on this. And to make no decision is to make a decision. A non-decision is a decision that you've said, Jesus, no. So we have become the judges. And the whole Bible is our text that we have to examine to come to faith that we believe that either Jesus is who he claimed to be, the Lord, or he is a liar or even worse, a lunatic, claiming to be God when he's not. That's true, a lunacy. So we have a conclusion to make, because one day, if he is the Lord, we're going to stand before him and he will be our judge. And he will say either one of 2 things to us. Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of the Lord, or depart from me, I do not know you, you who work iniquity. There's the trial that we have before us. We've seen what the courts have said, and now our court is in session. And it will be, as long as we're on this earth, we'll be in court session. There'll be no resting of the court until the final judgment day when we stand before our God. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.